Over to Brian and how it works for
Thanks, Joey. What's up, guys? How are we? This is pretty cool. This is pretty badass. Let's have a meeting. My name is Brian Worth. I am alcoholic.
Hey, Brian.
Welcome to the How It Works group. Let's go ahead and start the meeting off with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, and then have the serenity prayer. In prayer, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will now read the open meeting statement. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are glad that you're all here, especially newcomers. In keeping with our singleness of purpose and our third tradition, which states that the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking, we ask that all who participate confine their discussions to their problems with alcohol. And I've asked Lee to read the preamble for us. And it's somewhere in here. There you go, homie. Yeah.
My name's Lee. I'm an alcoholic. And this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve a sobriety.
Thank you so much, Lee. Next reading, I've asked Greg to read how it works. Right on top.
My name is Greg. I'm a recovered alcoholic and alumni of Any Length Recovery Community. Hey, this is how it works from Chapter 5 of Alcoholics Anonymous, Program of Recovery. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral image. Excuse me. Made a fearless and thorough moral inventory of ourselves, is what it says here. Number five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order. I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if we were sought.
Right on, thank you, Greg. I've asked Nicole to read the 12 traditions. She's somewhere in here.
Hey everybody, I'm Nicole and I am an alcoholic. These are the 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Testing. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And I got Jay to read the 9-step promises for us.
I'm Jay. I'm an alcoholic. And you don't know what this reminds me of. And it's just put a condom on the mic so I can talk to it. I'm Jay. I am an alcoholic. These are the 9-step promises. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Thank you so much, Jay. And lastly, we got Joey to introduce our speaker this afternoon.
Hey, I'm Joey. I'm an alcoholic. And just real quick, I was noticing a couple of interesting but kind of humorous points. There's so many people out here and about 200 cars and alcoholics and families, of course, but there's no cops out there writing accident reports. I can see 5 porches from here and nobody's falling backwards off of one of them. And there's probably 35 or 40 mini blinds and I see not one pair of eyes peeking out of them.
Yes!
And my dog's not looking at me telling me the dog catcher's outside. There are a large number of people here, and it took me back when I was sitting thinking about the book, that one of the reasons for the success of AA is the large number of recoveries in reunited homes. And looking at all the families out here, and I'm a crier, so I'm not really going to apologize. Anyway, the guy that's going to come up here and talk, first time I heard him, Lisa had his CD. And there's some of them you can listen to and some things that just grab you right off the bat. And then going through the phone trail through AA of tracking down and getting the phone number and talking to him and starting the phone relationship over the last couple of months has been great and very interesting. And you can sense kind of a presence, but then sitting over underneath the tent where he was eating, and you can just sense the presence of a sober man and the presence of God. But from Los Angeles, Adam T.
My name's Adam. I'm an alcoholic. I want to first thank you for inviting me to come talk today. It's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. Ultimately, it's a responsibility to give back what was so freely given to me. I want to welcome anybody that's new. You know, if you're trying this one more time, if you don't want to be here today, you know, if you think this is all a big misunderstanding. You know, AA wasn't on my to-do list. You know, I didn't get here because I had a bad weekend. You know, like a lot of us, I had a couple of bad decades. And this had to become, for me, a matter of life and death. I'm from Southern California. We have chips for like 30, 60, 90 days. I think they do that all over the country. And, you know, I had so many chips and key tags in AA, I could have played poker with them. It was awful. You know, I recycled through the rooms for 17 years. And I remember one secretary saying, "Give them back." And it was horrific. I thank God for the unconditional love of the old-timers who told me stuff like, "Don't even bother taking chips. Just sit in the back and shut up." But you know what? In saying that with love, they also made it very clear to me that the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous would always be open to me. That if and when I was ready, that there was a solution here. And, you know, that was really important for me to know. And if you're new, I mean, for me, there was so much guilt and shame about being a newcomer. You know, I did that walk of shame over and over and over again. And what I would do is I would go into your head and look back at myself and think, what a loser. My goodness, why can't you get this? What's wrong with you? And I know the old-timers were judging me. You know, if you're new, we're judging. Oh, we make bets. We're not that spiritual. Come on, think about it. I love it when they say, don't judge anybody in AA. You guys hear that around here?
Yeah.
And then what do they tell you 5 minutes later? Stick with the winners. Wow. Think about the contradictions you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember getting out of treatment. I'm in detox, and my counselor says, "Now, Adam, don't make any major changes in your first year." So I come to AA, get a sponsor. What does he tell me? "You got to change everything." Right? "Don't make any major decisions in your first year. You guys seen the third step? We thought well before taking this step." A lot of them. "Oh, don't get in a relationship in your first year. No one knows if that works. No one's ever done it." You know, they say we're not saints. There's always a saint in the crowd, right? "Hey, honey, if you got a halo, don't let it choke you. This is AA." But the one I love is God doesn't give us more than we can handle. Think about that statement. If God doesn't give me more than we can handle, then why do I need God's help? Think Think about that. Self-reliance. And the longer I've been sober, the longer I've been separated from alcohol, the more I've come to terms with the fact that I absolutely, desperately need God's help. I need your help. If you're new, the hardest thing for me to do is relinquish control, to ask for help, to separate myself from my ego. Help is the dirtiest four-letter word in these rooms. And we were talking about it on the way up here. There's three prayers in this life. One is God help me. It got a lot of us in this facility. One is God give me. It's the greatest distraction on earth. But the prayer you never hear is God use me. And I want to thank you guys for allowing me to come here and share with you. I'm probably the luckiest guy around. You know, at least to me I am, you know. And, you know, there was so much guilt and shame about being a newcomer. Eventually, I started coming to meetings drunk. Now, the interesting thing about AA in 2011 is if you see a guy drunk in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting these days, people say stuff like, "What's he doing here?" Right? Think about it. With the event of treatment, which swoops us up in our most desperate moments, throws us into yoga class, craft hour, nature walks. But what I would do, you know, my keen thinking, we have these late night meetings in LA, you know, 11, 12 at night. We have 2,500 meetings in the greater Los Angeles area. And I'd go to 7-Eleven, get a big gulp cup, fill it up with liquor, put a splash of Coca-Cola on top. Then I'd go to the late night AA meeting, do some of my best sharing. They weren't laughing. Looking for friends. You know, then I started going through treatment centers, and this is not a plug for treatment, but by the time I finally got sober, I'd gone through treatment 28 times.
Oh, God.
Yeah, not 28 days like the movie. This isn't Hollywood. 28 consecutive times. And I remember telling my sponsor I went through treatment 28 times. I was hoping that would get rid of the guy, you know, loser. Go find someone that's willing. And he looks me right in the eye and he says, "You know, Adam, that doesn't make you an alcoholic." And I thought, "You're kidding." He says, "No, it means you paid $500,000 for a big book." I wasn't laughing at that either. You know what all the treatment centers and religions have in common, if you really think about it? They all send their drunks to us. You know, treatment was a great place to fatten me up for another run, but treatment never solved the problem. You know, I'm not going to start citing and quoting pages today out of the big book, but page 101 of the big book says any scheme that attempts to shield the alcoholic from temptation is doomed to failure. And I have to understand that about treatment, that it may have its rightful place, but in and of itself, it never really solves the problem. It fattened me up for another run, but it wouldn't solve the problem. And I always thought the problem was alcohol. And a friend of mine said, "You know, Adam, that bottle of Jack Daniels, that little drink, that little shot glass, that little 12-pack," he said, "if that's your problem, you're probably not an alcoholic." And then in the very next breath, he says to me, "And if you are in fact an alcoholic, the type that's described in the doctor's opinion in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, your problem isn't alcohol." And you know, it took me another decade to understand what he was trying to tell me. See, it was obvious I couldn't live with alcohol. I'm that type of drinker. From the time I was in eighth grade, middle school, junior high, everyone could see I couldn't live with alcohol. I'm already pissing in my pants, drooling on my desk, passed out under the bleachers. My nickname's Space Cadet. I'm like 14. I can't find homeroom. It's obvious. This guy can't live with alcohol. You know, I was already in therapy at 11. Everyone can see I can't live with alcohol. But if you're an alcoholic like I am, the greater aspect of this disease, alcoholism, is that I can't live without alcohol. Not successfully, not happily. Alcoholism comes in people. It doesn't come in bottles.
Yes.
And I have to understand that. And what it really means for me to be an alcoholic, very simply, is that I have a mind that somehow always takes me back to drinking. A mind that always leads me back to alcohol. Very much like gravity. I set up this neural pathway, as therapy wants to talk about, and once I become a pickle, I can never be a cucumber again, no matter how hard I try. I know, it's not a clinical idea. Pretty basic. But I will fight to prove myself an exception to that rule. I have warped my mind to such a state of destructive drinking. And it will always take me back there. I have a defiant mind. I have a mind that will argue with anybody about anything at any time. You tell me it's black, I'll tell you it's white. You tell me big, I'll tell you it's small. You tell me to go left, I'll go right with an attitude. Right? And then I'll blame you for eternity. That's why we say denial is an acronym. It stands for don't even notice I am lying. And we don't just do it with booze. That's why you can tell an alcoholic, but you can't tell them much. If you don't believe it, start sponsoring somebody. It is critical for me to understand that is part of my personality. That you can lead me into the gates of hell, but you cannot push me into heaven. And until I come to terms with this disease, alcoholism, and the solution on my own terms, nothing can be accomplished for me. And that's why, you know, I talk about some of that humor about the contradictions, you know, in the rooms. And really, there's a difference between the fellowship and the program. And they aren't always in the same place. What I found in the fellowship is I find hope. I find inspiration. But the recovery, the plan of action, the spiritual awakening, the work, I found in the big book with a sponsor. And I think that those things, I really had to understand that difference. And, you know, understanding my denial and my resistance to recovery has a lot to do with that tradition of attraction rather than promotion. And the traditions are really important. That's why we read them. You know, the traditions protect Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what? You want to see some drama? Get between an alcoholic and a drink. You want to see some drama in my life? Get between me and Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I will respect the thing that's saving my life. One of us doesn't work the steps, one of us dies. We don't work the 12 traditions, we all die. The steps stop me from committing suicide. If you haven't noticed, the traditions stop us from committing homicide. You don't believe it? Get involved in a business meeting. Or a committee. You know, one of my home groups, you know, everybody pulls up in their shopping cart and, you know, a lot of low-bottom drunks. And it's really interesting because, you know, we get these people that come in and they want to change everything about our meetings. You know, they want to change the format and the way we run our meetings. And, you know, 2 weeks later, you never see them again. And the longer I've been here... Sound familiar? The longer I've been in AA, the more I want to keep Alcoholics Anonymous exactly the way it is. Because these traditions ensure our survival. I have to really understand that that's important, because for me, like a lot of us, when this becomes a matter of life and death, again, I'm going to start respecting the thing that saves my life. I remember like it was yesterday. I was in one more treatment center. I was dying of alcoholism. I'm going to break tradition. I've been on methadone maintenance for 10 years, okay? Going to a clinic. I was 120 pounds. I looked like I just got out of a concentration camp, you know. I was lost. I was broken. I let everybody down one more time. You guys remember. Some of you were just there, right?
Yeah.
And I'm in the detox circle, you know, with my fellow associates. Right? A vision for you. And this woman from AA comes in, you know, on her... We have a thing in the West, because I don't know what you guys call it here, but called hospitals and institutions. And H&I brings meetings into prisons and detoxes and treatment centers, and they have different terminology around the country, but the concept is the same. And this woman is on her H&I panel, and she's doing her AA talk, and she looks us all up and down, and she says, if I could give you all the gift of recovery, I wouldn't do it. And I looked at her, and I looked at the guy next to me, and I said, what a bitch. And then she said something that would later change my life. She said, the reason I wouldn't give you the gift of recovery is because I wouldn't rob you of the journey. And I understand today, in some ways, if I don't earn it, I don't own it. I have to have a relationship with alcohol. That gift of recovery, just like that gift of surrender or desperation, is personal. If you're new, we can't give you that. That really is the prerequisite for Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the cover charge to get in here. You know, I remember being 20 years old in AA, and the old timers would say, AA is the most expensive club in the world. $1 million program shoved up your butt a nickel at a time. And I was like, yeah, here's to you, Pops. You know, $500,000 later, 28 treatment centers later, I understood what he was talking about. The gift of desperation. It's a great acronym for God, isn't it? There's another one, it's a little harder. It's called Grow or Die.
Yeah.
And if you're like me, I had to get to a place in my life where my head couldn't get enough and my body couldn't take any more. Then I really understand what it means to be an alcoholic. When I really see what it means to drink against my will. To make all those promises. I'm going to take care of the family. I'm going to finish school. I'm going to show up for you, Mom. I know you got cancer. And not be able to do it. You know, I take so many people through inventory, and I always hear the same thing in that dishonesty. It's not the lies I tell others. It's the lies I tell myself. That lie that my mom's, you know, love for me was more powerful than her disease. That kind of mentality. I could write all day long on step one. Until I'd beaten down that liquor store door over and over and over again at 5 a.m., 6 a.m. Or paid the guy at 7-Eleven $100 for a six-pack because they were closed. Or done a lot of the despicable, diabolical, disgusting things that all of us do on that journey to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. You think writing about step one's going to help me? I have to have an experience. I have to see the truth about alcoholism. Now, if you're new, by the way, we're the only people that want a reward because we ran out of a burning building. So glad you joined us today for free lunch. But that's the reality. This is the only place on God's earth where they'll applaud because you came in to save your own life. Feeling heroic. Thanks for gracing us with your presence. I tell people, and I don't mean to be mean because I know I'm going to offend some people today, and I'm sorry, but you know, if you're sitting here today and you really don't want to be here, don't worry about it. You won't be. That's our third tradition, man. I'm sorry. AA was a big step up for me. And it doesn't matter about high bottom, low bottom. We were talking about it on the way up here. You know, Yale to jail, Park Avenue to Park Bench, the gift of desperation can be the same. Puke smells the same in a Mercedes. But I got to get to that place of hopelessness, of spiritual bankruptcy. I have to see that self-reliance has failed me, that there is nothing else I can do. I can't keep myself sober. So if you're sitting here today thinking about drinking, that beats the hell out of being in a bar right now thinking about getting sober. You're sitting around here waiting for the miracle to happen. Believe me, there's a few moms in here right now that think it's already happened. You're here. I had to bring the body and the mind would follow if I became willing to take action here. I remember when I got sober, my sponsor said, Adam, I want you to buy a black suit. And I said, why? And he said, well, unfortunately, if you stick around Alcoholics Anonymous, you're going to go to a lot of funerals. It's part of the way it is here. Then he said something really nice. He said, and by the way, if you drink again, at least we'll have something nice to bury you in. He was mean. But see, if you baby the alcoholic, you'll bury him. I need to hear the truth about alcoholism. That it's fatal, it's progressive, it's chronic. It's like being on a train, and the train goes to one place. It goes to jails, institutions, and death. That's the only place it goes. Now, if you're new, right now we're at a station. I feel safe, protected. I've been fed, I have some coffee, the heat's off. But see, my experience with powerless doesn't mean I can't drink. It means I will drink again. It means I will get on that train again. And I really don't know where the last exit is. I have to be clear, you know, don't drink no matter what. That's like join Nancy Reagan's Merry Band of Winners and just say no. When everything in my consciousness demands that I stand and deliver, I show up drunk. What's your drug of choice? How about what's your drug of no choice? What's the one I can't say no to? Right? And we throw around jails, institutions, and death like it's a cliche. Come on, that's like hamburgers, fries, and a Coke. They go together. Now, I do a lot of work in treatment, and you know, I do a lot of H&I, and I go into these facilities, and it's very interesting because if you get into, you know, detox and you start listening and talking to clients and you hear this, there's this foreign language that they speak. It's like a second language. It's called victimese. It usually starts with, I lost everything. I didn't lose anything. It was all drink coupons for me. We live in a world of delusion. One of the things in the big book is it talks about making decisions based on self that later leave me in a position to be hurt. Real simple, you know. I can't see how the drink bone connects to the jail bone. Right? Right? The meth bone connects to the homeless bone. It's like there's some break in the chain of reasoning there. Oh, and we do it with long-term recovery, too. I met her in rehab. I can't believe she drank. Right? That's called delusion. None of us are immune to that. I knew he was a crackhead. I can't believe he robbed my house. I need to write some more inventory. It is critical that I see that relationship. You know, a lot of us inherit this disease. We look at it in treatment. We see this genogram and how. But it's not about that. I may not be responsible for how I got it, but I'm responsible for how I treat it. I'm responsible for my recovery. If I wasn't responsible for the stuff I did out there, why do we have a dime stuff? You know, and I thought treatment was going to fix me. I had to become willing to take actions here that I didn't believe in. I will say it again and again today. I had to be willing to set aside some old ideas. If you were to add up the three primary relationships and beliefs and attitudes in my life, my relationship with God, my relationship with self, and my relationship with others, and you were to put an equal sign under that, you know what it would equal, right? Detox. And I couldn't see that relationship between my life and my thinking. And it was important for me to understand that idea. Now, I do a lot of H&I. Now, I should write, I'm an alumni from everywhere, you know? And one of the reasons I talk about that is because of the illustration of surrender. Now, one of the panels that I have is at the Veterans Administration. I'm sure you guys have a VA down here. And, you know, you get into a room like this size full of soldiers, and you start talking about surrender, you know what happens, right? Room gets dead quiet. Especially Marines. But if you ever watch a soldier surrender, the illustration's perfect. You'll see him take the rifle, very slowly lay it on the ground, sit down on the side of the road, wait for someone to tell him what to do, right? When you got 40 AK-47s pointed at your head, you don't throw down the gun with an attitude. And like these court card people, they put their court document in the basket at AA meeting. You sign my card, please. Right? Then they pee all over our bathroom because they're bad and they don't want to be here. You're not sitting on the side of the road looking back at the gun, because if you do, someone's going to shoot you. Am I looking back at alcohol? Am I looking back at the magic that I once found in booze? Is that the lurking reservation that Wilson talks about? Is that the peculiar mental twist that precedes the first drink? Is that the idea? See, for me, it's like I'm in the high school gym 20 years later. Band's gone, girls are gone, lights are out, and I'm sitting in that dark room all by myself saying, "Where's the party?" Party? There's no disco ball in the dope house. Delusion. A world of delusion. Full flight from reality. For me, it was like a dirty gas station bathroom. But my mind, because life has its moments, I will give my life to recapture those moments. Life has its moments, and for those moments, I will give my life to recapture and recreate the magic that I once found in booze. It's like Oz never gave the Tin Man anything he didn't already have. What am I trying to put in myself that's not already there? And my experience with AA is unless I can find that sense of comfort and ease that I sought from alcohol through this process, there's no way I'm going to stay here. Not for the long haul. You take the booze away from me, you got to give me something better. And that's what this is all about for many of us. You know, there's a direct relationship for me between willingness and surrender. You ever notice that you'll never see anybody more willing to work this program than the guy that comes crawling through the front door after a long, hard run? He'll walk into our meetings and he'll do anything, right? 90 meetings in 90 days. First day out of treatment, he's got three sponsors. Wants to take our whole coffee pot home with him. He don't even have a trunk to put it in, right? We all see that. Probably calling here every day, I need a bed. 30, 60, 90 days later, that same guy's looking me right in the eye saying, you mean we got to go to meetings every day? And like a prize fighter, what I do is I throw in the towel and then I take that towel back one little piece at a time. I take my will back. People that do not recover, it tells you who they are. Am I a cannot or a will not? It is my will that's stopping me from having a great life. It's my will that's preventing me from having freedom, from having joy, from having relationships that work. And I have to see that resistance. I have to look at what it is that's blocking me. In the beginning of this talk, I talked about denial. And if you're new, think about this idea. There's two kinds of denial for someone like me. Denial about the problem. But what's the greater aspect of denial? It's denial about the solution. That these time-tested steps, this plan of action, this design of it, won't work for me. You know, Bill Wilson, by the way, was in Time magazine as being responsible for the largest social movement of the last century. This thing's affected somewhere between 40 to 50 million people. And you know why I think it's not going to work for me? Because it wasn't my idea. Now, I'm not the only self-centered person here. I love it. You know, we say, right, we don't think much of ourselves, but we're all we ever think about. I have to be clear on this idea of willingness and surrender. They are equally proportional. And what happens for someone like me eventually is I become willing to take actions here that I don't believe in. I become willing to set aside these old ideas about self, about others, about God, so I can have a new experience with this thing. I become willing to take these actions. And that really is the idea behind this whole concept. We were talking about it before. You know, in the therapeutic community, there's a science called cognitive behavioral therapy. Guess what? In AA, it's one sentence. You can't think your way into right living, but boy, you can live your way into right thinking. Cost you a dollar. It's pretty interesting. But it's that simple for a lot of us. That when I became willing to take these actions that I didn't believe in, and that triangle that we have in AA, recovery, unity, and service, translates into three specific actions for me. Contribute, belong, and learn. Contribute is service, belong is unity, to learn is to uncover, discover, and discard what's blocking me. The more that I live in the center of that triangle, the more that I change. All of my life, I predicated everything on how I feel and how I think. And what I've learned to do is exactly the opposite. to take actions I don't believe in, and that changes the way I think and eventually the way I feel. And then I look back and I say, man, how did you ever live like that? It's like driving iron every day. You lift weights every day. You gonna get strong? Does it matter how you feel about it? You know, we have greeters at our meetings, and I stand at the door of an AA meeting and I greet people, hi, I'm Adam, hi, I'm Adam, hi, I'm Adam. It doesn't matter if I'm thinking, I hope you drink and die. And I walk to that meeting every single week, and you know what everyone says? Adam, great to see you, man. How you doing? Because I cannot separate cause from effect. I take commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel needed. I have a sense of commitment, a sense of usefulness, a sense of purpose. I discover and uncover the things that are blocking me in inventory, and eventually I find freedom. This is the only prison where the key's inside. And until I really understand that I'm in a prison, I can't get free from it. Until I see it in inventory, until I see and understand these ideas in the fellowship and in the program through the literature, I'm not going to get free. The power, the program, the process. It's very, very simple. There's a difference between the act of surrender and the state of surrender. The act of surrender is what got me into AA as a newcomer over and over and over and over again. Big difference between the act of surrender that gets a newcomer into AA and the state of surrender that keeps the old-timer here. It's a completely different concept. It's a difference between what gets us here and what keeps us here. It's kind of like watching a swan glide across a pond of still water. It's so beautiful. It's so effortless. It's so graceful. But you know what's going on under the water, right? That swan's paddling like hell. And if you're new, we have a chapter in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Into Action. There's no chapter into feelings. Right? No chapter into thinking. We ought to have a chapter into whining from the podium at the noon meeting. I'm like, dude, get a job. And again, I became willing to take those actions in that triangle until my feelings and my thinking begin to change. I have to really understand that. There's a guy by the name of Dr. Harry Tebow. Harry Tebow is one of the contributing members to some of our original literature. You can Google him. It's not an outside issue. And, you know, what Tebow talks about is the difference between compliance and surrender. Compliance, if you're new, is cooperation without agreement. Surrender, a completely different concept. And I've been in compliance with AA for years, doing it for sober living, doing it for the judicial system, doing it for the parole department, doing it for DCSF. Where I live on the west side of L.A., they do it for the trust fund. It's a good motive, right? But see, that concept of surrender, the concept of surrender, like that soldier that lays down that rifle, is unconditional. It's unconditional. This is not an intellectual pursuit. Again, I have to have an experience with alcohol. I have to come to see that self-reliance fails me. I had to get to a place where it becomes for me, like a lot of us, life or death. The idea to concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic, think about it, the word concede means to surrender with a fight. And if you're new, every alcoholic defends their right to drink. Think about it. It's part of being an alcoholic, is I'm going to defend my right to drink. And I have to be clear on these ideas. If you're a drunk like me, trust me, fear's not going to keep me sober. Getting a third strike, living on the street, being homeless, losing my career, throwing away my education, giving up my family. Did scared straight work for you guys? Right over my head. Now, the big book talks about the problem drinker and illustrates the problem drinker as someone that can stop or moderate given sufficient reason, right? Big difference between a problem drinker and a real alcoholic. Hey, if you get a problem drinker and a real alcoholic in a jail cell, like a drunk tank for drunk driving, you've got two completely different philosophies going on. You got the problem drinker over here on one side of the cell thinking, man, why'd I drink so much last night? I knew I shouldn't have drank that fifth beer. Why'd I drink so much? Real alcoholic sitting over here on the other side of the cell thinking, why'd I take I-95? Yeah, the court card people never laugh at that joke. Shit ain't funny. You could have been home cleaning your pipe today. I know what y'all do around here. Problem drinker's wife says, honey, if you don't stop drinking, I'm leaving you. Problem drinker cleans up his act, doesn't drink in the house. Gets a little Visine. Now, if my woman says to me, honey, if you don't stop drinking, I'm leaving you. You know what I'm thinking, right? I'm thinking about single life. Think about it. Get honest here. If anything got in the way of alcohol or that other stuff, it was out of my life. Alcohol completed me. It had me from hello. To concede to my innermost self. Of course I'm going to defend my right to drink. You think I'm going to let go of the love of my life without a fight? I can't even let go of a bad relationship. And I have to understand that relationship with alcohol, that if anything got in the way of booze, it was out of my life. If you're new, in order for me to stay in recovery, if anything gets in the way of Alcoholics Anonymous or the 12 steps, it's out of my life. A woman, I don't care how beautiful she is, how much she lauds me, how great she makes me look. I got an ego. I remember the first time I said that from the podium, there she was in the back of the room. She's like, honey, you don't look like an alcoholic. Oh my goodness. You're not speaking again, are you, sweetie? It's Saturday. Why do you got to go to all those meetings, honey? You know that program, AA, it's getting in the way of our relationship. So a couple months later, it's Thanksgiving again. It's Meet the Family night. So I'm on suit and tie, I'm at the head of the table. Thanksgiving Eve, out comes the exotic wine. She's like, honey, oh, you can have one glass of wine. It's just a glass of wine. Come on, sweetie. Oh, come on, it's natural wine. 4 more rehabs. Oh, I stole her purse that night. Went down to the hood and got an outside issue. And she came to detox with a get well card. Now, I know I'm going to offend some of you guys tonight. Don't be offended. I know if you're, she had another problem going on. You know, she belonged to another program. For her, a slip was 10 minutes of compassion. I told you I was going to offend you. They can't stand to see us have fun. I tried to send her to Codependents Anonymous. She wouldn't go. You know why? She didn't have anyone to go with. Yeah, I told her when she dies, someone else's life will flash before her eyes. You guys know what a codependent is, right? Y'all know the difference between a codependent and a toilet seat? Toilet seat don't follow you around after you shit all over it. He told me I could cuss a little bit. Now, don't tell... I hope you didn't bring your significant other here, because if you relapse, you ain't getting no more money on your books. Now they know the truth. Right? I know, you're feeling stupid. I've been there. Been played for a fool again. God, I love AA. I do. And I've been on both sides of that. I've done the same thing. You know, that's why we say if the alcohol don't get you, the lifestyle will. You know, we go out there and we chase it in other ways. I'm addicted to drama, excitement, and BS. You know, and eventually I grow through that just like I grow through everything else. You know, I got to understand these ideas. I mean, I have sponsees that pay more in taxes than I earn all year. They have these huge careers and these little tiny AA programs. I've never seen one of them stand the test of time here. What do I do for a living? I stay sober. Oh, what do I do for money? That's over there. Now, if I get those two things mixed up, I'm back in handcuffs. I get those two things mixed up, I'm back in an emergency room. Or I get a double header, I'm handcuffed to a gurney in an emergency room. Right? With a cop trying to get an outside issue out of my mouth. Oh, I've been there. I have been there. I swallowed it, officer. I'm going to beat it out of you. Now you know why it's easy for me to be grateful, huh? And I have to be clear on these ideas, that if anything gets in the way of recovery, it's out of my life. You know, if you feel like you're on the outside looking into this thing, you know, there's a big difference with being in the program and on the program. Sounds like the same thing? It's the same as being in a submarine or on a submarine. Now, when the ship takes a dive, you'll find out if you're in it or on it. The certain low points ahead, as Wilson talks about. If I fail to enlarge and perfect my spiritual life. When it becomes a matter of life and death, there's an earnestness about this. Then we talk about, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. The problem with me as an alcoholic is when someone like me stops drinking, the outsides get better, but the insides get worse. A lot of people stop drinking, the outsides get better, the insides get better. That's not my experience. That first step concept is that I've got a body that can't process alcohol. I have a mind that can't process reality. And that's the mind that will always take me back to drinking. Those are two completely independent thoughts. That mind will always take me back unless I have a psychic change. And I will try to put anything in front of that to solve that problem. I have to understand the origin of this, the self-centeredness, the root of alcoholism. And unless I address that, there really isn't a solution for me. Self-knowledge won't fix someone like me. I mean, I've had every relapse prevention class known to man. You know, I'm in treatment 28 times. I'm back in relapse prevention class, learning about my triggers. I'm like, counselor, waking up's a trigger for me. Sir, will you please go back to your dorm? And I'm back on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles, drunk again, pissing in my pants with a bottle of whiskey reciting chapter 5 out of the big book. And the bum next to me is like, will you shut up, man? You're ruining my eye. Give me that bottle. And I'm crying because I can't get back here. Because I got a head full of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got a belly full of booze, and I'm separate, different, and alone one more time. And if you're new and you think that's painful, you know what's worse? Being here today, being a real alcoholic, and not working the 12 steps. It's worse. Coming to meetings late, leaving early, not having a sponsor, not working the steps. You got no anesthetic. It could be worse. That's why, you know, we have all these moments of appreciation for the guy in his first 30 days. We ought to have a moment of recognition for the person in their last 30 days. Hey, you can always spot him. Just ask him how he's doing. I'm fine. I'm like, really? Why don't you tell your face that? Huh? You know what I'm talking about. Remember so-and-so used to sit right there? He went home and shot himself. Overdose. Back in prison. See, I don't want to be in my last 30 days. I know what it's like to be in Alcoholics Anonymous and be in my last 30 days. I know what it's like to sit in a room like this, surrounded by people and fellowship, and make a decision to drink. And you know what? It's over. I'm puking my guts out before I get to the liquor store. I make a decision to drink. You think I'm going to call my sponsor? It's the last guy I'm going to call. And all of my life, I was one decision away from a drink. And today, because of recovery, there's a whole world between me and that decision. And it's about commitment, it's about traditions, it's about people like you, rooms like this, a plan of action, a loving higher power. And you'll hear people say, oh, we're all the same distance from a drink. I don't believe that. You think this guy sitting here has got four or five commitments, being of service, working with new guys, doing step studies? You think he's the same distance from a drink as this guy here that's doing nothing? And I don't mean you. But it's important for me to understand that concept. That when we talk about nothing ensures immunity more than intensive work with others, that I have to understand there is a solution here. This is not about abstinence. This is not about not drinking. County jail is about not drinking. This is about a plan of action, a design for living, a way of life, a roadmap again to spiritual success that will bring about joy in my life, that will bring about freedom. You know, part of the word spiritual is ritual. And a lot of these unrelated things that you may think that you have to do around here eventually become components that bring about a new way of life. And they seem so unrelated. The things that we do in that triangle. But together, that is greater than the sum of all their parts. And again, I have to look at what my resistance to that new way of life is. You know, I remember telling my sponsor I had a degree when I came to AA. You know what he told me? He said, Adam, thermometers have degrees. You know where they stick those? He was so mean. See, the knowledge is necessary for me to win the confidence of a newcomer where no one else can. Where the clergy couldn't do it, where the therapist couldn't do it, where the drug and alcohol counselor couldn't do it, where the parole department couldn't do it, where the psychiatrist couldn't do it. Another drunk was able to win my confidence because he lived like me. It's necessary, but it's insufficient to keep me sober. I have to give it away, not only to keep it, but to even get it. And if you notice at the end of our meetings, we don't say keep coming back, it works if you know it. We say keep coming back, it works if you work it. And I had to understand that this plan of action, this way of life, is based on commitment and action. Thinking it through doesn't work for a guy like me. Just play the tape through. I love that one. driving my brand new car past Skid Row, playing the tape through. You know, my head tells me, oh, Skid Row wasn't that bad. Toothless Honey, cardboard box, I can make it on Skid Row. And normal people don't laugh at that. That's insanity. See, I always thought insanity was doing the same thing and expecting different results. Isn't that what you hear in AA? That's not the insanity I live with. I have a completely different brand of insanity. It's doing the same thing, knowing exactly what's going to happen and what. Doing it anyway. Right? At least the other kind of insanity, doing the same thing and expecting different results, at least there's some hope there. Right? Yeah, but I know exactly what's going to happen and I do it anyway. And that's what points back to why I'm powerless. Because I've lost the power of choice. Because my mind will always take me back there. Unless I have a plan of action in my life, a design for living, my mind will take me back to drinking. And again, I keep thinking the problem is alcohol. I have to be clear on that idea in my life. It's very interesting because, you know, we talk about chapter 5. We read chapter 5 in every meeting in Southern California, all over. And that's usually when everyone goes into text mode, right? It's like we've heard it so many times. But one of the interesting things in chapter 5 is at the end of chapter 5, the part that we read, we talk about three things. It says our personal adventures, right, before and after, make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that I'm an alcoholic and I can't manage my own life. B, that probably no human power can relieve my alcoholism. And C, that God could and would have sought. And I'm thinking, before and after what? But see, for me as an alcoholic, it's before and after I stop drinking. A lot of people come into AA and think the unmanageability in the second half of step one is because of drinking. Not necessarily true for everybody. If it's just drinking that's creating the unmanageability, stop drinking. For me, it might be the other way around. That because I need to label, because I need to compare, because I need to judge, because I'm separate, different, and alone, I gotta drink. And that's what's so interesting, because Wilson, in the doctor's opinion, talks about the phenomenon of craving that ties us all together. A lot of people I drank with come into AA, and as soon as they put the drink down, something magical happens. They fit in, they're part of, the career welcomes them back, they come to meetings once a year, never work a step, and their life gets consistently better. They've been serene since their ass hit the seat in AA. That's not my experience. My experience, every time I put the drink down, the first thing they say to me is, boy, you need to be on medication. My God, why are you so emotional? What's wrong with you? Why can't you sit still back there? And I'm crying at dog food commercials. When I'm not drinking, I have a whole other set of problems. They're outlined on page 52 of the big book. When I'm not drinking, I'm afraid of misery and depression. When I'm not drinking, I can't control my emotional nature. When I'm not drinking, I can't manage my personal relationships. Sound familiar? When I'm not drinking, I'm full of fear. When I'm not drinking, I'm of no use to other people. I lack purpose. When I'm not drinking, I'm basically unhappy. And the way that plays out for me in untreated alcoholism, the second half of step one, is I don't fit in, I'm not part of, you don't understand me, everybody's in my way, there's no opportunity, life's not fair, I'm not appreciated, she's cheating on me, they're not paying me enough for God's sake, I gotta drink! And you know what's amazing? As soon as I pick up a cocktail, I intuitively know how to handle situations that you should have. Think about it. Give me two or three more drinks, fear of people and economic insecurity leave me, I'm buying a whole bar of drinks. Hell, I'll write you a check. Not only are you getting better looking, honey, I'm getting better looking. Right? give me a couple of Vicodin, I can comprehend the word serenity, and I know peace. Give me a little cocaine, I want to start a business with you. Come on, really, right? Give me a little meth, I want to take a nap. You give me some heroin, I want to clean the house. That's an abnormal reaction. You guys are laughing at that, there's something wrong with you guys. Does not occur in the normal or temperate drinker. Think about it. Alcohol, by the AMA, is classified as a depressant. Normal people have a couple drinks and they stay stuck like, whoa, I gotta slow down, I'm feeling it. I got work tomorrow. I have a couple drinks and hey, I want to get married. I want to go to Vegas, baby. You give me a couple drinks, I'm trying to find the car keys I hid for myself before the first drink. See, for me, alcohol is a stimulant. And that's what makes me bodily and mentally different from my fellows. That's what the earth people don't understand about us. They say stuff like, I can't believe you drank again. And I'm like, I can't believe I waited so long. Because I drink for the effect produced. Alcohol does so much for me, I don't care what it's doing to me. When we read the promises, it's so interesting because we suddenly realize that God could do for us what we could not do for ourselves. Didn't some of us suddenly realize that alcohol had done for us what we could not do for ourselves? If that's really true, then there's a relationship between God and alcohol, and you can see it by substitution in the promises. You get into the ghettos in this country where everything's been burned to the ground, there's always two things that stand out. Churches and liquor stores. You know why? Because they both give man hope. And if you're a drunk like me, hope doesn't matter to someone like me until I've burned my life to the ground. Hope doesn't matter to someone like me until self-reliance has failed me. Only then do I become willing to take actions that I don't believe in. You ever notice how quick someone will write a four-step, they got a gun to their head? God, I wish I could do that to somebody. Just write the damn thing, will ya? Because I know it'll work. I know it'll work. We need help, but then we want to decide what kind, right? Here's a life raft. I don't want that one. It's blue. Like, I'm going to pick what's good for me. I have to understand. Carl Jung sent a letter to Bill Wilson relating spirit to spirituality, the Latin root. Again, relating God to spirituality and alcohol. Alcohol, for people like me, is an artificial means to a spiritual experience. These 12 simple steps are a practical means to a spiritual experience. You take away the booze, you gotta give me something better. And that, for me, is what this is all about. The problem with AA and the steps, as I saw it in the beginning, is it doesn't work right away. It doesn't happen right away. It takes a little bit of time. In the spiritual experience in the big book, Wilson says, what seldom could have been accomplished by years of self-discipline often occurs in a few short months. Now, people will argue about that all day long. I know people can write a four-step on a napkin in 15 minutes, but I think for the change to come about, it takes patience. It's painstaking. It requires effort. I had to be willing to work at this. And if I lived to be 100 years old, I could never pay Alcoholics Anonymous back for the freedom that I've got, and the joy, and the love, and the relationships. Alcohol is what gave me the courage to ask that beautiful girl to dance, to walk across that dance floor, to go after that big job, to go after that audition. It was alcohol that gave me the wings to fly. And unless I can find that sense of comfort and ease again through this process, I'm not going to stay here. And when I'm not drinking, I'm chasing you four exits past my exit on the interstate, jumping up and down on your foot in traffic. I'm counting your items in the checkout line. At 11. I'm so separate, different, and alone. My own mother's like, for goodness sake, just drink. You are nicer. Chuck C. said it better than anybody. He said, the real problem here isn't alcohol. He said, the real problem is a conscious separation from God. And then he points to the 11th step where you see the solution. Conscious contact with God. And for me, like a lot of us, the bridge from 2 to 11 is steps 4 through 9. Maybe what they should say in AA is, rarely have we seen a person fail that's done steps 4 through 9. Rarely have we ever seen anybody do 4 through 9. Right? I do the AA waltz. 1, 2, 3, drink. 1, 2, 3, drink. 1, 2, 3, drink. And I'll put anything in front of the one thing that will bring about a psychic change. You know, we have a chapter in the book called We Agnostics. If you're new, there's no chapter We Believers. Einstein said, I'd rather live this life pretending there's a God and finding out there's no God than live this life pretending there's no God and finding out there is one. It just had to be that simple for me to be open-minded. I can't deny the power. You can't deny the numbers. A friend of mine said the definition of hell is if God were to show you all the things you might have accomplished if you'd only believed in yourself. If you're new and you can't believe in yourself, believe in the power of this program. Believe in the collective consciousness and the love of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's undeniable that it's right here in the middle of all of this. It's just this simple. There's a poem in Notre Dame. It says, I sought my God I could not see. I sought my soul I could not free. I sought my brother, and I found all three. And that's why we talk about nothing ensures immunity from drinking more than intensive work with others. The therapeutic value of one working with another is without parallel. That simple, basic idea. My sponsor said the 12 steps were like the face of a clock. When I'm in 12, I better be in one with a new guy. Re-experiencing the phenomenon of craving, re-experiencing the obsession of mind, re-experiencing the spiritual malady. You know why the grass is greener over there? It's because they're watering it. And the more that I work with new people, it seems that the more I get clarity, the more that I have freedom. And I had to take a look at my old ideas. I was confronted with a lot of those old ideas. I came in here with a punishing God, with the idea of a condemning God, and I had to be rid of some of those old ideas. I tell people, you get in a closet and pray for a hot dog, you know what'll happen, right? You'll die. I don't mean to be mean or blasphemous, but I had to really look at some of the ideas that I'd come in here with. You know, God can move mountains, but you better bring a shovel. You know, or I have a Santa Claus God, that if I'm good, I'm going to get a reward. You know, where I live, we have a parking meter God. You get a parking space, great. You don't. That's a visual. I tell my sponsees, don't pray for women. God's not a pimp. Now, I don't mean to be offensive, but in order for me to understand these ideas, I have to see what's blocking me. Part of the idea of forgiveness in 8 and 9 is that I am going to release people from the prison of my own mind. It has nothing to do with them. And I had to understand, you know, you ever notice when an alcoholic's not having a good day, it's when I'm not getting my way. We're all like 5-year-old kids around here with old people's faces. Oh, really? You don't believe it? Cross one of us. I'll resent you for generations, man. And that's so clear with me, is that I am the actor trying to be the director. Wilson's so clear on that. I'm trying to erase the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and all the players. It's got nothing to do with the play. It has to do with traffic. It has to do with my employer. It has to do with my relationship. And if everyone would do as I wish, life would be wonderful. And you know what? In that play, me being the actor, I found out that I give God a role in my play. And when God doesn't meet my finite human expectations, I become separate from that power. And through inventory, unless I can reconcile the difference between the way I think things ought to be and the way they actually are, I cannot be free. I had to get to the root and cause of alcoholism, what it was that takes me back. A lot of it has to do with me needing to play God and understanding that relationship that Wilson talks about. He's the director, I'm the actor, he's the father, I'm the child. Just this simple. God will steer, but God won't row. And the more I misinterpret that simple idea, the more spiritual pain I'm in. If this sounds familiar to you, then you got what I do. Surrender or be dragged. Right?
Yeah.
Self-will, run riot. One of the things my sponsor said to me, he said, Adam, what do you want from AA? What do you want? What do you keep coming back here for? And you know, with an ego like I have, I said, well, I want a yacht and a Learjet. And you know what he said to me? He said, Adam, if you work steps 4 through 9 and you consistently live in 10, 11, and 12, what you'll get, because I always want to get something, right? I'm in it for, I'm a taker. He said, what you'll get is a quiet mind and a loving heart. And I looked at him and I said, what do I want that for? But see, you guys know, what is the opposite of a quiet mind? This refers to the grouch and the brainstorm in the 4-step. The opposite of a quiet mind is a mind that won't shut up. It's a mind that's up at 3 in the morning telling you're a loser. You're fat. You know that job you got? They're going to do the background check on you tomorrow. Right? It's up 5 minutes before me every day saying, you don't need AA. Those people don't care about you. No one's calling you. And the opposite of a loving heart is a vindictive heart. It's a prejudiced heart. It's a resentful heart. And all of my life I was crucified between two thieves, yesterday and tomorrow. In yesterday I have guilt, shame, and remorse. In tomorrow I have fear, anxiety, and worry. And our spirits are like a body of water. When they're perfectly still, like glass, they best reflect the heavens. The product of inventory eventually is that I get a quiet mind. I can reconcile those two thieves. The past is resentment. I have an inventory for it. The future is fear. The freedom is to be in the moment. You know, one of the things about inventory that I never understood, because you do inventory over and over again, it becomes really redundant. And my friend said to me, you know, if you go to the ATM every day and you withdraw $20, it's boring, it's mundane, it's the same experience. And people don't do it. But what's going on behind the wall? The account's being debited. And what I didn't understand is the more I write inventory, the more I see my esteem, my pride, my security, my ambition, my personal relationships, my beliefs, my attitudes, and my ideas, the more I start to emotionally detach from them. The more I'm able to match calamity with serenity. The more that these promises become a reality. This is a very practical method to a psychic change. There is so much science in this. You know, even in all the treatment centers, the doctor's opinion in the cycle of addiction is still the gold standard. And they all throw a big book at us after they take that $50,000 check. It's amazing. And Bill and Bob, we've got this thing. I mean, it's like AA has an answer for you guys. If you're dying of this thing, we have an answer here. You know, you tell a little kid, go in your room and straighten out your room. You think he wants to do that? You tell that same 5-year-old kid, I want you to go in your room and throw out all your old stuff and we'll buy you new stuff. How long would that take? If you're new, don't judge this process. One of the greatest things my sponsor said was, why don't you try everything we suggest for a year, and if it doesn't work, go kill yourself. That's what you wanted to do your whole life anyway. But see, when I really gave everything to AA, when I got the commitments, I went to meetings regularly, I wrote inventory, I got involved in a book study, I went out and I started helping others, my life changed so profoundly that those therapists that had been chasing me around since I was a little kid were asking me what I'm doing. And I'm like, well, I'm taking the 12 antidepressants on the wall, sir. They just don't get it. They just don't get it. AA is the greatest thing that ever happened to me that I didn't want. Because I didn't know what was possible. And one of the things my sponsor said is, Adam, how free do you want to be? You want to be free enough to just survive this? I ask people, how you doing, man? I'm hanging in there. God, I'll buy you a drink if it's that bad. It's not supposed to be like that. Someone said AA is like sex. If you're not having fun, you ain't doing it right. Told you I'd offend some of you guys. I have to find out what it is that's blocking me. You know, this guy comes up to his sponsor. Now, he says to his sponsor, I was in a restaurant last night, and I paid with a 20, and the waitress gave me a change for 50, and I don't know what to do. And the sponsor says, well, you should give your money back. The girl could lose her job. So he gives the money back. 2 weeks later, the sponsee and the sponsor are out having dinner. Sponsor pays with a 50. Waitress gives the sponsor change for 100. Sponsor puts it right in his pocket. Right. The sponsor gets outside the restaurant. He looks at the sponsor and he says, I can't believe that. She gave you too much money. Why didn't you give the money back? Sponsor looked him right in the eye and he said, it bothered you. Now, don't misinterpret that idea, okay? The idea here is that I have to discover what it is that's blocking me. One of the things we say is where there's hysterics, there's historics. The things that make me hysterical, the things that get me excited, the things that upset me. In the big book, it says anything that harms, threatens, or interferes. When I discover what those things are that create that hysterical reaction, I have to look at my history. I have to look at where that comes from. That's the only way I could be free of it. And by doing that, eventually I get that quiet mind. You know, some of you guys remember Gilligan's Island? You know, we were talking about Gilligan's Island the other day. Did you ever notice that Gilligan's Island was the seven deadly sins? Think about it. The captain's gluttony, right? Gilligan's sloth, Marianne's envy, Ginger's lust, Mr. Hal's greed. I would have killed everyone on the island but Ginger. But you know, what I see in my life today in step 6 and 7 is I put down the drink and I pick up the fork, right? Next thing you know, I can't see my feet. And I'm naked on my knees in step 6 and 7 saying, God, I can't live like this anymore. So I put down the fork, I pick up the credit card. Now I'm going to fix what I did with the fork with the credit card. I'm in liposuction. You know, I'm buying clothes. And then I'm in step 6 and 7 on my knees again in bankruptcy court saying, God, I can't live like this. Then I put down the credit card and start acting out in the rooms. Can't go to that meeting again. And I have to understand there's 412 step programs. They're all identical except for the first half of step 1. And unless I straighten out spiritually in 4 through 9, it's very easy for someone like me to play musical poisons in the first half of step 1 and never really spiritually evolve. And what I've understood now through doing this process, if you're new, we don't love each other in spite of these defects. If you've been around here for a while, one of the things we find out is we love each other because of them. And it's just that simple. If someone did to me what I did to myself, I hate to say it, but I would have killed them. In closing, if someone did to me what I did to others, I probably would have killed them. And then I come in these rooms, and you want me to pray to God? I didn't want God to find out where I was. See, that's the conscious separation from God that Wilson talks about. Those three relationships with God, with self, and with others were destroyed. I was bankrupt in those three areas. You really look at the 12 steps by design. Steps 1 through 3, recreate and develop a relationship with God. 4 through 7, recreate and develop a relationship with self. 8 and 9, recreate and develop a relationship with others. 10 maintains my relationship with self. 11 maintains my relationship with God. And 12 through service in my community maintains, develops, and grows my relationship with others. So coming out of the steps, I'm able to live in harmony in those basic, simple relationships. There was a great spiritual teacher. He was asked, what's the most important thing of all your teachings? He said, love God with all thy heart, love thy neighbor as thyself. Built right into the steps. And if God scares you out of these rooms and you're a real drunk, don't worry about it. Booze will scare you back in. We got you. So in steps 1 through 3, I give it up. 4 through 7, I clean it up. 8 and 9, I make it up. 10, 11, and 12, I keep it up. And as a result of that, I'm able to navigate around the drama. I'm able to match calamity with serenity. I'm able to stay in fit spiritual condition. I'm able to reach back in my community and actually help somebody. You know, one of the oldest stories in AA, it's about a little 5-year-old kid. He's 5, and he wants to play with his dad, and the dad's like an accountant. He's trying to figure out a way to occupy this little 5-year-old. So what the dad does is he gets this map of the world, and he rips it up into like 50 pieces, and he gives it to the little boy, and he says, what I want you to do, son, is I want you to put this map of the world back together, and when you're done, we'll play. Gives him some tape. Little kid comes back in 2 minutes. He's got this whole map of the world reassembled, and it's perfect. The dad says, that's impossible. I'm 40. I couldn't do that. How did you do that? Little 5-year-old looks up at his dad, and he says, well, Dad, on the back of the map of the world, there was a picture of a man. I just put the man back together, and the whole world fell into place. If you're new, that's the spiritual technology of the 12 steps. Again, to rebuild the man or woman. 1 through 3 with God, 4 through 7 with self through inventory, 8 and 9 with others through amends. And then to maintain, develop, and grow those three simple relationships. 10 with self, 11 with God, 12 with others. And, you know, for me, like so many of us, the whole world just fell into place. And again, I looked back at myself and I thought, how did you ever live like that? Now, thank you guys for having me, and enjoy the rest of the weekend. Thank you.